In the opening of the show.
Well, there's been enough war crimes in 2026, so I don't think I want to
already, yeah.
Yeah.
What a year, eh?
January the 3rd. I feel my hair is getting cold.
Player 2 Pixelcast episode 176, the first episode of 2026. I mean, what are the odds of that? We've got like a 6 and a 6, and I guess it's 1 in 10, actually. Never mind, my host? Yeah, I'm cool and sober and shit. My name is Tim Henderson, I am hosting this here episode this evening, which... it's proper us evening where Rob is, it's like early evening where I am. And it could be any time of the day in the world, wherever any given person listening is. On that note, Rob, hi.
Hi. Happy New Year.
Yeah, happy... Boy, that got off to a start, didn't it?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it did. Oh, boy.
No sense of fresh, clean slate here. It's like the fireworks go, and then everything is garbage again. For at least a decade now. I want to say 11 years. 2014 is like when I noticed, at least, started paying attention to like things really starting to fall off the wagon.
Yeah. Yeah, there are people who say it was after Bowie's passing.
There are plenty of landmarks you could point towards. Whatever. Things are a hot mess.
Yes.
The last year in video games was actually pretty good, so long as you were playing them. That almost feels like a glib thing to say, but it is kind of just the reality of things.
Sadly.
I guess. And this being the first episode of 2026 means that, yeah, we're just going to do our little informal game of the year 2025. One winner, two runners-up. There's only two of us, so this may have to be fairly quick. But before that, you know, just random stuff we've been playing, and it's been a minute between episodes, because, you know, we do actually take... Christmas area off, and I was traveling, so we might have recorded this a week earlier, but we didn't because I wasn't, you know, near a microphone. So Rob, you've been playing exactly one thing.
Yes.
It is a thing that I expected, actually, so yeah, go right ahead. You said you'll be back, you're back.
I'm back, yes. So I've spent a bit of time over the break playing Terminator 2D No Fate. We did the one of those, I think it was like after Gamescom, we talked about stuff we were looking forward to end of the year, and I did mention it was something was looking forward to in that list. And it's pretty much lived up to being a really solid run-and-gun shooter. So, obviously, the way to frame it is, what if they made a Terminator 2 arcade game that wasn't that light gun game back in the 90s? So it's like very 16-bit visuals, very 16-bit audio, it's primarily
say, like, arcade 16-bit, like it feels level above a Mega Drive or SNES.
Yeah, so like basically above Neo Geo kind of thing. Really lush 2D graphics, sprite work, really good. They even do, so you know the Sarah Connor nightmare where the bomb goes off,
yeah,
and all of that. They do still bits of recreating that in pixel art, which is really cool. So the primary thing of Terminator 2D No Fate is side-scrolling run-and-gun shooter. The thing that really impressed me that I wasn't expecting going into it is that it actually covers more than the movie. So it opens up like just before, well, a few months before, and it leads up to the stuff that leads up to Sarah Connor being thrown in the mental hospital. So you play the first couple of stages as her, like there's sort of an initial training stage where John's being kidnapped by some thugs and she's got to rescue him. And then
genre, though, in a rational world, if a woman is running and gunning around the streets, she probably should be locked up.
Yeah. But, like, the second or third stages are her busting into some Cyberdyne facility, like, trying to find out stuff. And then you fight the big boss, like, weapon thing at the end, and then it's like she gets captured. Then it jumps into the future, and you're playing as John in the lead-up to them discovering the time, you know, the time
the
machine.
The way they get back again, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, more run and gun futuring there. And then it cuts back to, then it sort of catches up to the movie, opens where Arnie's in the bar, where it's pretty much a straight beat 'em up.
Like, yeah, I've seen some footage from this. You've got like buff naked pixel art Arnie.
Yeah. And what's great is you go into a bar and they've licensed the songs that are playing, like that song that's playing in the movie. So like.
Okay. The interesting there is I could not, hum or tell you what that song is, but
I don't know either.
Probably recognize it. You'd recognize it.
Yeah, if you know, you recognize it when you hear it. So you're fighting through there, you know, ends up doing the thing. You fight the, you know, you throw the guy onto the stove, and then you fight the boss, the guy running the bar, and then it cuts to the bike chase after, you know, after the first confrontation between the Terminators and John's escaped on his dirt bike through the through the storm drains. And then it's like you do Sarah escaping the mental hospital. Then there's the when they go to Cyberdyne to blow it up. SWAT van chase, and then the steel mill. And then there's a couple of stages after that, which I haven't beaten, where it's like back into the future war.
Okay. I was about to ask how long the game is, but if you haven't
It's about an hour. So you don't play this as I'm going to play it and it's done. You have to do a lot of unlocking. Cause one of the things that's really cool is that there's a couple of points where, there's two points where it happens where I've seen, I don't know if there's any more, but you get a decision choice. And on your first playthrough, it's locked. So the first one is the bit where they've escaped the mental hospital and they're in that garage. And it's like if you've seen the special edition of the movie, there's a whole debate about they have to pull the chip out of Arnie to flip it to read-write mode. And you basically have the decision of where you're going to do the change or not. And then the second one comes to when Sarah's about to assassinate Miles Dyson in his house.
Yep.
And you can have the option that to kill him or to let him live. And so by default, it's like you let him live and you do the Cyberdyne bit. But on subsequent playthroughs, once you've beaten the game, which I haven't done yet, you can actually select the other option. There's other like story paths, which I think is real interesting to play around with in sort of a bit of a sandbox.
It is, especially in considering, again, the future in The Terminator 2 for anybody who's depressingly for me, but good for you, too young. Do you know, remember this movie? The future in this, I believe, is 1997.
95.
It's 95?
Set in 95. That's even
worse. Oh my God, yeah. I could swear like the apocalypse is supposed to happen in 97. It is. Okay.
Judgment Day is like August 29, 1997. And they originally were going to release this game a week after August 29. And I was like,
that would have been cool.
Yeah. It's like, why didn't you release it? But they had to delay it. So it was supposed to be like the first week of September, and then got pushed back to basically December.
Yeah.
But yeah,
there were probably reasons that they didn't want to have to do, but like, yeah.
They had to, they weren't ready. But yeah, I'm having a good time with it. It's challenging. Like I said, I've been playing on its default difficulty, and I've gotten to that first future war stage at the end, sort of the first after the events of the movie thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it plays really well. It's a good challenge. I may do a run on easy just to be able to unlock those paths. Cause there's a whole bunch of practice stuff. There's like an arcade mode where you don't have all the story bits. So this isn't a game that you play once and you're done. You really want to keep going back, trying to beat your score. Like you get ranked on every stage based on how fast you do it, how little damage you take. You've got to get used to the fact you've only got one life and can take several hits, but you've got continues and you can find more continues. There's a lot of little bits like that. You get like a bunch of alternate weapons. It's a really well done game for a straightforward action run gunner. I know it's really well done. I have had a lot of fun with it. Like I said, I've still got to spend more time with it because I haven't finished it and I want to be able to do that at least. But yeah, if you like the movie, I think you'll get a little more of a kick out of it. Like T2 is a movie I really enjoy. And it's sort of like having the little fan service moments is something that's very, very, very enjoyable and very fun.
I will throw it out there that Terminator 2 is probably still one of the landmark action movies ever made.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you have not seen, you know, even the first one's also a classic, but you can just jump straight to the second, frankly.
Yeah.
You'll miss a couple of things, but the second one is a better movie as well.
Yeah, it's the first one was a fairly low budget affair, and they did some amazing work with what budget they had. It's like Alien and Aliens is the way I always see the relationship with the first two Terminator movies.
It's not going to help anybody who's too young to like know what we're talking about here. The point is, if it's on Netflix or something, you should watch Terminator 2 first if you're interested in this at all. Terminator 2 is still an excellent standalone. If it needs to be action movie. Terminator 2, Matrix, and then like the 1-2 punch of Mad Max and John Wick. And we haven't really...
Ooh.
And somewhere down the line, those Mission Impossible movies got pretty good as well, but...
I rewatched the Bourne movies recently. Definitely. That's first rate. Mm.
Okay.
Especially realizing that Tony Gilroy was responsible.
We had a golden age at the turn of the century, apparently.
Yep.
Yep. Anyway, yeah. 2D, it turns out, yeah, like 2D Terminator can actually be pretty, pretty good. And I guess if you do Naked Arnold Schwarzenegger with pixel art, you don't really have to like blur anything out because you can just kind of like abstract it enough anyway. If you've seen the movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If not, well, there's a
reason.
Go
watch it.
There's a reason for it. Yeah, watch the movie. Yeah, I've kind of like bounced around all over the place since the last time we recorded one of these, especially since, you know, the last one is always Sadistic Santa, which I will not touch with a 12-foot pole at this point.
I've done it
once, never again.
I don't think I'm ready to do it again.
Like, if Santa would just give me a mediocre game as opposed to what I got that one time. But yeah, speaking of mediocre, there you go, I made my own segue. Boy, it's like been a weird year for me, like in terms of disappointment of the year. So on the website, my disappointment is, and I will still actually stand by this, which is a Switch 2's display, which just fell victim to trying to tick too many boxes. Like, honestly, it's not terrible, but they really did fall victim to like ticking too many boxes as opposed to just doing a couple of things right, which feels very un-Nintendo.
Mm.
Like, Nintendo's normally pretty good at like bargain shopping and like just doing the stuff that needs to be done well, and like leaving everything else to the side.
Like, I'd respect a lot of those fancier, like, HDR and whatever would be, like,
HDR, that display is almost completely pointless. Like, you can kind of tell there's a tiny, tiny bit of extra pop. Maybe, but I might even be talking myself into it. Like, it's... Because there's no local dimming. It's an LCD with, like, just really laggy response times. Oh, I don't know how to think of it. Like, there's ghosting. Ghosting is a problem.
Yeah.
If they, you know, just kind of, like, cut down the feature set and done the bare basics very well, maybe that wouldn't have been an issue. But to 1-2 punch that, I would definitely say that Metroid Prime 4 is a disappointing game of the year.
Oof.
That is like the most polished tar 7 out of 10 that I think I've ever played in my life.
And that's one. That's something I asked for Christmas. Oh boy.
Did you get it?
Yes. I've had a chance to start it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You're probably still in the happy phase. Because, like, I said polished. I mean, polished in a very specific sense, in the sense that, like, it doesn't crash. And it feels really good. So positive. It feels really good. Especially on Switch 2, it is, like, the whole last year, Huso had this, like, retweeting thread on Blue Sky about games that need to look any better than this, and, like, games that are, like, a decade or so old. Mm. And I feel like Metroid Prime 4 is kind of, like, the epitome of this. Because you kind of got this, like, Switch 1 game beefed up from Switch 2, and it looks really fucking good in Switch 2. Unsurprisingly, it also runs incredibly smoothly. But, man, you can really tell that, like, just the design of this thing is, like, so, so confused. And maybe a decade from now, we're going to get, like, a proper insider story of, like, what the hell went down. Because we know that, like, Bandai Namco started this, and then something went something, and then Retro was sold to finish it. And it still took them years.
Yeah.
To do. And every fear that everybody had when they saw that bike in the desert is 100% founded.
Oof.
It is just straight up just a empty hub world. But I did say, like, it's the most polished 7 out of 10. And part of what makes it gets it up to 7 is the polish. So, I mean, that bike feels really fucking good to control. Like, the game feels great. Like, all that stuff is just dialed in. But just the design decisions themselves are just so bizarre. To the detriment. So that, and obviously you've got the first character, Miles, who everybody saw in the previews, and then there are a couple of other soldiers that meet along the way, and one of them's kind of a fun character, but even within that, the game is the worst game for having them in it. The game is the worst game for having that desert overworld in it.
Yeah, like, I'll admit, I really want to time jump into the future and see when all the goss comes out, because, boy, like, I've been here, like, yeah. Like, I guess I'm glad I got it as a present. Someone else paid for it.
Someone else paid for it. So it's fine. It's arguably good even, but, man, like, I have a feeling like I just get the sense, like, were they, like, kind of forced to, like, not start from scratch, but to, like, just build on the skeleton of what was left behind?
And that definitely feels like the case here, because I'm sure they would have gone back to just pare it down had they had the opportunity.
Because
maybe they thought they'd get it done in less time, and then
my assumption, and this could be completely wrong, is that Nintendo said, "Hey, just finish this, like, build on what's there. We need to get it out fast. We've already announced it," and then it took fucking forever anyway.
Yeah.
Not that was going, because apparently, like, the first Metroid Prime had a pretty development cycle, but it came out as an all-time masterpiece.
Yeah.
And the thing that's really working against Metroid Prime 4 is, like, Metroid Prime got a pretty good remaster, like, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And having played that, you know, in the scheme of things, fairly freshly, like, oh man, Metroid Prime 4 is not that well designed.
And the thing kind of bumps me out, they never did a remaster of 2 or 3. They never completed that.
So in my memory, at least, I want to say 2 was so good. I should probably step back. I have not played 2 in a very long time. I have not played 3 at all. I think I bought it backward compatibility on the Wii eShop and then just, like, never got around to it. Also, the Wii U's Wii, whatever.
Yeah.
But it seems like the direction seems to be more 3, because, I mean, appeal to me, and I guess I'm not the authority on it, but there's definitely people who are, like, longer-term fans than me seem to agree. The idea is, like, it's kind of like a sense of, like, isolation, loneliness, and exploration. And, like, throwing too many other characters in is, in itself, a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
It's just very easy to observe that just take those other characters out. There are some very cheesy, bad writing with that. Also, storyline calls you the Chosen One. Literal words, Chosen One, numerous times. God. They don't even think of their own proper nouns. They just say Chosen One. But yeah, the desert is very, like, kind of Ocarina of Time, if you can remember back to that. It's a hub world, and, like, this leads to this area. Okay, you want to go to the ice area, it's over there. You want to go to the desert area. Well, you're in the desert, sorry. You want to go to the electric area, it's over there. You want to go to the forest area, it's over there. It's that kind of. And each of the areas is actually pretty well designed. The problem is that you kind of, like, find your way, and then you have to go to each one, and you go through and you finish the main run. And basically, it's like that, and then at some point, you need to get one more upgrade, and you're directed to go back and, like, find that upgrade. Which is the antithesis of what made Metroid Prime so good, where everything was just kind of connected together and you'd, like, notice things, and as you got your power-ups, you'd be able to go back and be like, oh shit, I can get that extra missiles or that extra health now.
Like the classic Metroid design direction.
And it was always, and you knew some areas better than others, but you kind of knew the map at large. You knew, like, the key areas. You don't really learn the key areas here. It's just like, go here once, and then eventually you're going to go there again to get, like, one other essential thing to finish the game.
God, this all bums me out. I just think I need to replay Prime Remastered.
Prime Remastered is still very good. To be fair, there are 2 or 3 points I remember playing Prime Remastered. There's some bits that are still, like, they're more obtuse than they needed to be in that game.
Yeah.
But, okay, one, it came out, 2001, 2002? Two, you have Google now, so, like, you're stuck for a couple of hours, you can just...
find it. Yeah.
Look that up. And it is weird how much of some of this, like, tonality matters, because, okay, you just have that Miles guy is on comms all the time. Ugh. Effectively doing half the time what just would happen in the original Prime, which is, like, your suit would detect something and just go, like, beep, 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 beep.
Yep.
The difference with that tonality just kind of felt like, you know, you just had your technology helping you out and you were still alone. Here's this annoying guy telling you, and right towards the end, there's a key progression point. This annoyed the crap out of me. You needed to speak to somebody, one of the characters you rescued, who's in the desert. And I'm going to tell people right now, he's somewhere in the south, and I want to say he's definitely in the south of the desert. And all the information he gives you is he's in the desert, which is basically he's somewhere in the world map.
Yeehaw, needle in a haystack simulator.
I wasted like 2 hours just driving around this fucking desert because I just did not go to the block that he was on. He has a campfire, and if you get close enough, you can kind of see smoke. But also, you're on a motorbike, so you can actually miss it.
Yeehaw.
The irony of there is the idea that Samus meets another hermit in a desert and just hangs out for a night is like the one kind of character interaction I think would be forgivable. Like just two loners just sit in silence for a little bit and then like move on. That actually kind of would have been great. But yeah, there are so many design decisions that they do. You can feel like the 2012 in this almost, like, or like a late era Wii U. Like, either they built on what Namco had started, or like they had a whiteboard of ideas that they'd started for Metroid based on what was popular at the time, and then they got approval to do Donkey Kong and they did that instead, and then they were told they're doing Metroid and they like wheeled out this dusty old whiteboard.
Yep. It's still
good. Instead of thinking what makes it, what makes a good Metroid Prime or just Metroid game in general, let's just follow this.
Damn.
Yeah. For the first half, I think I was like super enjoying it, but it is when like the sense of exploration is just not like starting to pay off. Is like, oh, okay, yeah. This game is decent enough that I will finish it because it is super polished. Again, polished in a not buggy way, feels good way, not in a design decision way.
Yep.
That you can kind of like get your way through it. Oh yeah, that was a real bummer. Then I spent the rest of the break trying to play through Legacy of Kain's Soul Reaver, which is another game that really shows how well Metroid Prime has aged. Because that game is obtuse as shit, man, and it does not give a fuck about yellow paint.
Oh, oof.
I bet playing that in a PS1 or a Dreamcast was probably great, but it is not... You know what? It probably holds up really well if you played it at the time and you have, like, fond memories and you kind of, like, an idea of, like, where to go and what to do.
Yep.
The remaster is, like, really loving. Definitely paid respect. But it also does, again, when it's kind of working in the same broad ballpark, shows how good the original Metroid Prime actually was in terms of design.
Mm.
But then saving grace, like, flight back home again, I have finally discovered what the greatest, well, maybe not the greatest, but, like, I finally found a really fucking good airplane game, which is Saints Row 4.
Oh.
Saints Row 4, and I presume probably 3 as well. They were both on sale together for like $2.75 or something.
Wow.
On a Switch eShop over the break. And I was like, I own both of these on PC already anyway, but for the less than the price of a cafe latte these days, yes, I'm using the coffee analogy, might be worth owning these again. They apparently run pretty rough on Switch, but running a backwards compatibility on Switch 2, you just kind of like brute force through that. And I did post a night or two ago some wild shit going on with like the light reflections in Saints Row 4, man. Like, oh, wow. There is no screen space interference. Like, just on like, I mean, not like the entire world, but like a lot of like the neon stuff reflecting on the road. Like, traffic lights, for example, you look down and the traffic lights will go off the screen and the reflection will still be there. And It will change colors.
Wow.
When it goes from red to green, which means it's not just some, presumably means it's not some baked in cube map.
No. Wow.
I'm like, this can't be bounce lighting. Like, it's too early and it's a fucking Switch game.
Wow.
But I mean, that was... That game came out like 2013 or something?
Yeah, so that's tail end of 360 PS3.
It was a very late era PS360 game, yeah.
Yeah, and Switch is roughly on that hardware level, so...
Yeah, so the reflection, what do you know? Reflected lighting in that game is just fucking wild. I mean, the image looks a bit kind of like chunky and the draw distance would be better, but like, whatever. Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know, Saints Row 4 is sequel to Saints Row 3 is when like Volition threw everything to the wind and it's like an open world GTA-like that's just kind of taking the piss out of everything to the point where they just straight up go, yeah, the game's happening inside a computer now and you can run faster than cars and you can jump over buildings. And then occasionally you have real world missions that like draw it back to Earth to give it like some structure and thing, but that also just makes it like a very good, I just need to kill time in the airplane game. Still like definitely dated in some ways, but like still they're super fun to play, super approachable, would recommend to anybody who's going on a holiday and just needs something to kill some sort of transport time with. Especially Switch 1 version running on Switch 2. At least the Saints Row 4. Couple of stutters here and there, but it ran really smoothly. Obviously, you've got a PC version from years ago, and if you've got a Steam Deck or whatever, I presume that would also run like butter.
Hmm.
So yeah, unofficial, like, game of the year for the beginning of 2026, Saints Row 4, baby. There's also a song in the soundtrack called, like, Walk Like Donald Trump, and you technically are the President of the United States in that game. It is very weird the way this game is forward-aged. Anyway, boy. Yeah. For better and worse. Anyway, speaking of music, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, our favorite stuff from last year.
Woo!
And we are back. All two of us, and we're just going to call this the official Player 2 Gamers of the Year now. Screw everybody else who didn't show up.
They had their warning.
They did. And if I did not actually get the email out for this particular recording super early, but I did have it out. I would feel early enough. But also, yes, everybody had their own personal picks on the site anyway, but we're going to ignore that for now. And say that, yeah, we are just going to basically go down our own Games of the Year for last year. Basic structure. One winner, two runners-up, and, you know, apparently Rob doesn't need this, which for him, of all people, is interesting. One of those runners-up can just be just a game you liked in 2025, even if it didn't come out in 2025. I will find out if he was telling me the truth earlier on, though. So, Rob, what is one of your runners-up?
All right. Well, the first one will be Tron Catalyst, which I really enjoyed when I got to cover. It's like back in the middle of last year was when I put the review for that out.
It's still super weird when you say last year, but yes.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I really like what Tron Catalyst did. It's sort of like, it was this nice little isometric action adventure. There was a bit of a time loop kind of set up with the story. Your character has this glitch that allows them to loop at certain points. And that got used in some interesting ways for puzzling about, especially early on. The story built up and did some cool things as well. It wasn't the big tier game I think people were expecting from a Tron license, but it is way better than the latest movie is. So, you know, no leto there. So, but yeah, I had a really good fun time with it. And I think it was a cool story, cool execution, really well done little game. And I feel like it deserved better than I think it got in terms of just like how people saw it.
So just kind of got forgotten, I think, more than anything.
Really fast, which is again a really sad state of affairs.
Not the only game that would have happened to.
No, not at all.
I'm sure there are plenty of games that people could speak about fondly that I'd be like, oh shit, right. Even including my own runner-up, which I managed to play just before the end of the year when I like jetted home for a bit, which was Sword of the Sea. Which I have to say is Journey's inferior in every single measurable way. But when Journey is my second favorite game of all time, so we're going to have to.
It's got big.
Big shoes to fill, man. It doesn't message as well. Like, it's not as kind of cleverly. The thing, like, I don't know, one thing, like, sort of the sea, you can like see the video game mechanics there. You can see how it's a video game. Part of what was genius about Journey was like, I need to express this thing and video games is how I'm doing it. And I've found a way to like make that happen. Whereas sort of the sea, like, okay, not as clear a thing to say. It's still kind of there, but also it's a video. Okay. You can grind now and there's stuff to collect and things. But game actually came out on my birthday. So like, this is just also 100% my jam. Like, this is just, like, feeding directly to me. This is, like, a huge personal bias thing. But that game still looks gorgeous, feels gorgeous. Absolutely love the aesthetic. Don't really know why the ocean needed to come into the desert, but looks cool, whatever. Like, abstract fun, not too long. Huge, huge plus point in the year of our Lord 2025, now 26. Also, that carries on, like, if you just want a game that's, like, movie length.
Yep.
This is one to look at.
There's we need more of those.
Plus. Yeah, it's a new game plus. Because the game was so short, I may actually even consider doing the new game plus at some point.
Ooh. Heck yeah.
But yeah, absolutely shameless in like trying to copy Journey. Like, even like some of the imagery is like just the mountain is like right there. It's just straight up the camera sometimes turns like perfectly. So yeah, if you haven't played Sword of the Sea, don't forget that it came out. It's pretty good. If you haven't played Journey though, go play that instead.
Is that even playable on...
It'll be PS's? Backwards compatible surely through the PS5 because it's a PS4 version.
Oh, there is a PS4 version. Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't know it made the jump to PS4.
They did a free upgrade, mercifully, which has allowed me to play it more recently than I otherwise would have.
Ah, cool. Yeah, that was a little detail I missed, that it had a PS4 upgrade. Cool.
Yeah, that one kicked out what could have been, because I was gifted a copy of Shinobi as well, like just before the break. The difference between Shinobi, I cannot just knock over in one evening. Both of those games are very much my jam in opposite ends of the spectrum, but yeah. I haven't played enough Shinobi yet. I've only played it very tired so far.
Yep.
Not a game that benefits from that very much.
Yeah.
But if this recording was a week later, this could be a little bit different. Or it could not. Who knows? Whatever. Sword of the Sea gets it, though.
It's always funny how those turn of events go.
Normally it's just like whatever my mood is. Like, you kind of like the lower down list you go, like the more it's like, just is this a this game Thursday or this game Friday?
Yep.
Whereas in this case, it's just literally a case of I'm still catching up.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that feel. Don't worry.
Yeah. Anyway, I do believe you have a second runner up.
Yeah. So my second runner up is Earthian, which is just such an amazing tour de force of like this, you know. We're going to write a brand new game for the Mega Drive in 2025. And it's a really high, really well done shooter. It's really technically accomplished with just having so much more ROM space to hand to do lots of cool visual tricks.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack. Really cool challenge. That's not ridiculously hard. I'll admit, I want to play it more, but I'm kind of holding off until I can order the actual cartridge for the actual Mega Drive.
That seems very you.
Yeah, I think that it feels kind of right. I've been playing
rad on a CRT as well. If you've got that happening,
yeah. Sadly, I don't, which bums me out. Especially over a nice RGB.
Yeah, this setup. Game I believe actually made the Digital Foundry Get Graphics of the Year's award just as like a technical accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some moments in there that look really awesome. Like, there's an animation of your fighter when it launches. Like, you get the little launch sequence and it blasts onto the screen, and it's just so many frames of animation. It's like, is that like just, you wouldn't believe it's just, you know, 2D sprite work. It's like, it's, I presume it's pre-rendered and turned into sprite frames.
Yeah, that would have to be it. That would have to be it. But
yeah, and for what I believe was primarily like a 2-person team at Ancient to do it is just like, yeah, that's there. And again, you know, you've got Yuzo Koshiro doing the soundtrack because it's his studio, and it's just like, the music slaps. I need to get a copy of that OST at some point.
Although, yeah, speaking of the music, though, like, do you have an original Generation 1 Mega Drive? Because this shit is going to matter.
Yeah, I have a first-gen Mega Drive. Not the earliest Gen 1, but it's a first-gen Mega Drive.
I don't know. I guess I don't know in detail enough. All I know is that, like, the sound chips change. Like,
yeah.
They get cheaper to make, and they like downgrade that quite substantially.
Mostly consolidated a bunch of hardware with the Mega Drive Genesis 2. But yeah, so I've got a Model 1. It's not the best Model 1, but it's a Model 1, so yeah.
That should sound pretty rocking if you have.
Does
the headphone port even work? Actually, it occurred to me like there was one in those things and I never used it.
Yeah. So basically, my RGB cable, so for Mega Drive 1, the RGB cable has, like, the RGB port only has mono audio on the video port. So if you want stereo, you've actually got to route a cable to the headphone jack at the front.
Huh.
So that's what my actual video cable is like. It's not one I made. It's one I bought from a cable specialist, but it's like, yeah, it actually has a little breakout cable that goes to the front headphone jack to send the audio down.
So you get stereo audio properly to the. Yeah, because, I mean, I only had a Mega Drive 2 as a kid. And, like, even then, I'm pretty sure we used, like, a TV tuner RF switch and not, like...
Yeah, and you'd lose it. My understanding is that the video port on the Mega Drive 2 does actually have stereo audio, but not for the Mega Drive 1.
I mean, our TV would not have made a difference. It would have been on mono audio.
Yeah, mine would have been on RF had I had one back then, too, so...
Do you wonder what it would have been like to, like, see a Mega Drive set up on, like, an actual, like, 80s kind of, like, proper stereo system, decent TV. Not something childhood me ever got to experience, though.
Yep. Yeah.
Or early 90s, for that matter.
Yeah. I 100% with that.
Yeah, I'm going to use my own loophole rule, which I don't think I've ever used before. Other people have. For a game that definitely frustrated me and almost stalled me a couple of points throughout the year. So my favorite game being about 5 years old, one of my runners up, sorry, being about 5 years old, and that being Spiritfarer.
Ooh.
Just because I think it kind of like kicked Expedition 33 off the contention perch. by providing you like a bigger emotional gut punch at the end.
Ooh.
I'm going to leave this up to you. I'm going to put a spoiler warning here, like, just in case. I feel like this game of the year stuff should, like, spoilers anyway, but obviously this is an unexpected thing. But Rob, do you want to know why it, like, kind
of. Yeah, because I've seen a bit of it in action. I don't remember seeing the ending. A friend of mine definitely streamed it at some point, so I saw part of it, a chunk of it. So, yeah.
I'm going to put the spoiler warning again. Like, if you don't want to know, like, skip forward a couple of minutes. Because this one does go on sale for, like, $10 every now and then, and it's probably worth it. So the whole conceit of Spiritfarer is that, well, I think you believe you yourself are dead, and you're, like, just kind of, like, sailing around, like, this underworld sea, like, taking care of people who are manifest as different animals until they're ready to, like, actually go to the final gate, and, like, move on. And, like, there are numerous different, and they're all pretty well-realized characters, and some of them jerks, and some of them are lovely, but, like, you kind of, like, feel affected for them all. They gut punch, and this is kind of just the most simple, tiny bit of genius, is when you finish the game. It's not the ending itself, it's when you get to the end credits, and they put In Loving Memory Of at the very first spot, and a credit roll. And Ooh. It's immediately apparent that all of these people who you took to the spirit gates in the game are the people who have died that the game is in memory of.
Oh.
And it's just like, that's right. Oh man, my heart, this hurts.
Yeah. Oof.
Oh man. But yeah, like top points for like really hitting in that strings area. Definitely could have used some like pacing issues or like being less obscure. Like at some point she was like, okay, I don't know where I'm supposed to go on this gigantic ass map. Which again, if I was playing that on airplanes a lot, like Google
search, wouldn't be helpful.
IGN Play Guides, whatever, would probably help you out a lot there.
Yep.
But yeah, in terms, when I do this, it's just like stuff that like stuck with me regardless of how much fun I was having with it at the time. And that, yeah, that end credit thing still just kind of gets to me. It's like, God damn it, guys. Like, I fully respect you, but God damn it. Yeah, anyway, we come to the most project, at least for anybody who's read the website, we come to the most predictable part.
Yep.
Semi-predictable, because it has to either be an your game of the year or your indie game of the year. And there is the inherent problem here. It's the same problem that we have with the Game Awards, actually, where it's like, going, okay, if a game wins Best Action Game and three of the final contenders are in the Best Action Game category, then we kind of can erase the other two.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, for me, it's Sektori. Like, it just did so much right for me. Like, it's a very me experience. Like, it's very disengaged brain and enjoy. It takes a very solid concept in the Geometry Wars style of twin stick shooter, and it turns everything up to 11 in all the right ways.
You're not the first person I've heard raving about this year, well, last year, both years, actually.
Huh. Because, like, for me, so I originally saw a post on it, like, 2024. Like, I saw a social post from it, because I remember making a post in my Discord about it that's like, this looks sick. And I completely, like, just, I didn't follow the dev, which was the rookie mistake, because I should have at that point to be ready. And I saw Blue Sky blow up, like, someone reposted into my feed that it's out. It's like, and I did, yo, the Donald Sutherland face from Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You know, that gets memed. Yo, he does the, yeah. And it's like, oh yes, and so it was Instabuy. And, like, it just, what it does for that formula is some really ingenious stuff. It's got the variety of game modes, like not just the main campaign, but there's a bunch of cool ones. Like I love, so there's one that riffs on the pacifist mode from Geometry Wars 2, the second one that came out on the 360, where you can't shoot. All you can do is just fly through gates. And that one just ramps up the intensity brilliantly. The mode I really love is called Classic. And what happens is you go through and fight, and there'll be a multiplier pickup that spawns, well, just a pickup. And if you collect it, it'll give you a shield and it'll give you a weapons upgrade. But if you let it time out, it increases your score multiplier. So there's this risk reward thing, because you've only got one shield. So if you get hit and then you get hit again, you die in it and the run is over. So you've got to balance it of like, oh, do I want to let that multiply up, even if I'm risking, like, not having a shield?
That is gigantic risk reward.
Yeah. It's such a simple twist that it becomes really engrossing. There's this other cool mode called Assault, And it's basically a timed run. And what happens is there's no randomness to the way the levels spawn. They always spawn the same wave patterns. And so what happens is you've got the timer counting down for like 3 minutes and a wave will spawn in and then there'll be a pickup. You collect the pickup, the next wave spawns in. And so to really maximize the score, you've got to take advantage of your dash because you get the dash because you don't have the normal multiplier. All you've got is your dash multiplier and you chain that by dashing into the pickups. So you want to keep dashing into pickups, which brings more enemies into play. And while you're trying to blast them, keeping the pickups chain going so you can maximize your score. There's just all these modes that it offers that's really unique. And then there's the vibe, like that main mode where you've got the shifting play field. It's such a simple concept that it adds so much to just the challenge of surviving a level because you've got to be ready for the level shifting about on the fly. And it's all just, again, the execution is so well done. It's so tight. It responds well. The music is amazing. And I love that it's basically a two-person team. The main dev who did the majority of the game and his brother who did the soundtracks and a composer who did the soundtrack. And it's just like, and of course it's got the Housemarque source being that the guy was ex-Housemarque. Like he left ages ago. So he knows, like, I think the last game he worked on there was Resogun. So he knows his stuff.
He knows his twin stick shooters.
Yeah. And so it just lands so well.
Yeah, my main criticism is, Nick, if you do not know what this game is called, you will not be able to read the logo.
Yes. Yeah, that's a fair thing.
It looks cool, but it looks like Sanskrit as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I'm just looking at it I've got my iTunes window open with this and I can just see, and that's just one of the albums that's just in view. It's like, yep. Yep. It's definitely a logo, but everything else about it, if you enjoy that kind of twin stick action, if you want to just have a good disengaged brain and enjoy session, just pick up and play for like half an hour or so, have that rush. Sektori nails it so well. I'm still just. It's not a deep game, but it's just the way it's gotten into my head. Just really, I don't know why it has that. No other game has done that for me this year. It just really has nailed that.
Isn't it deep? Like, I mean, it sounds like it kind of like could go on forever.
Yeah, like the main game mode has like five levels that you beat, and you have a boss encounter at the end of each. But then you can go back and forth. You unlock extra ships. And there's this whole sort of card deck thing of like upgrades that you get. And all those systems, the way they all interplay, just really, I think, is really what adds to that challenge, like giving you different strategies and techniques and ways to keep blasting that I don't think many other twin stick shooters have really played around with.
I mean, it's a genre that was kind of in need of a like creative injection, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, fully agree. And I think this is just given it that. Certainly very interesting to see what people get inspired by it and do next in terms of that genre.
Yeah, well, it's a very Rob answer for our final. For our final pick. Yeah, mine is also a very me answer, I guess. And that is, it is actually Death Stranding 2. A game for which the main draw against is like the free time I had to use for playing it was spent doing other things. So like it was kind of like I did not have the same block of time that I did for the original. But man, it is like weird and creative and like they've listened to like player feedback about like what does and doesn't work in the first game quite clearly. Almost a little too well. I don't know if it's like a Nightingale syndrome or whatever, like kind of like wish it like forced you to like make do with just like ladders and like sludging through the outback like a little bit more. For anybody for whatever reason doesn't know what Death Stranding is at this point, like being a Kojima joint, I just assume the average listener would know it is ostensibly about delivering stuff. You carry shit on your back and like the gameplay is like it's an open world game where getting to the destination is kind of like the meat of like what you actually have to figure out. But they've made combat like way more accessible this time around, which is actually probably for the better. But you get cars or trucks. I use trucks a lot. way sooner, a lot more weight, like all these crazy like power ups. But the thing that like really gets me is again, like just this kind of like directorial touch, and like you can love or hate Kojima, but like I'm going to miss it when he's gone, because there is a very, very sense of auteurness about, like insane auteurness to a certain degree, where like is every cut scene in particular like just feels very intentionally directed. The music feels very carefully picked. And this, especially coming off the back of like playing some Ubisoft stuff, which some of those games have actually been pretty good, but like I'm watching the cutscenes going, okay, they clearly just like were told these models have to go into this building doing this thing.
Yep.
Whereas like the opening credits alone in Death Stranding 2 is like, it was like, wait, is this film footage? I was like, well, no, this is just like this weird flex where it's like close up of the game assets. I mean, they've probably, for those maybe like exerted like more control over the lighting than there would be when you like pull back the camera and like out in the open.
Yep. World.
But like even then, like you get there and like the first thing you do is like just kind of like walk home over this like rocky mountainous terrain, and it feels epic. It's like this is a flex of an opening, and all you are doing is like walking down some like jagged rocks. And then like later in the game, like there were a couple of points where I was like actually were like literally, and we're probably gonna, I'm gonna turn this into a topic later this year, I'm sure. Where I was just like, whoa. And like, when is the last time a video game like made me go, whoa? Like just like kind of Keanu Reeves, Neo from The Matrix, just whoa. I mean, that you used to be able to get that like every year, like kind of guaranteed there'd be like something that would come across that you hadn't seen before. But now you've got to like be creative with like what you're doing as well. And there are definitely a couple of points where it's like, wow, it has the best looking rain since Metal Gear Solid 2. There is a specific scene towards the end of the game where I was like, and that also says a lot of Metal Gear Solid 2 is also a Kojima game. The rain in Metal Gear Solid 2 holds up really fucking well, by the way. Like to the point where like we are how many like decades later and it is still like one of the best fucking storms in any video game. They finally did better. There's a point where the rain in this game is just like, there's stuff going on. It's just like, okay, this is fucking awesome.
Is like, so I haven't played the first. Do you need to have played the first to be able to enjoy this properly? Or could you go straight into the second? If you
want any hope of following the story, and keep in mind, it's
Kojima, so.
But also, like, I mean, I only followed so much of the story because, I mean, I was complaining earlier about, like, Metroid Prime 4, like, not having enough proper nouns. Death Stranding 2 has way too many. My only issue with Metroid Prime 4 in that regard is, like, do you really have to say the chosen one? That is just, like, two on the nose. Like, just come up with some word for your race's messiah or whatever.
Yep.
Because there are, like, codex entries upon codex entries in this, which if you have that, if you have 150 hours to give, it all probably ties together really, really, really nicely. But, like, there is actually some emotional payoff in this. There is some silly stuff that is also just, like, chef's kiss. Like, they know what they are doing, and it is kind of spectacular. And I want to talk about it, but I should not talk about it because, you know, the game is less than a year old. It would definitely still be spoiler territory at this point. Probably more earned emotional payoff than most Kojima work, aside from maybe Metal Gear Solid 3, and I haven't played that in years, so I don't know, maybe it actually does actually line up. That's only the key plot beats that you can follow, like, kind of, like, pay off pretty well in themselves, and then there's a whole bunch of insane stuff and, like, so many side activities and potential upgrades. Also, just, like, the best-looking game that I've seen in, like, the last year. Really excellent HDR, which means it looks better than any PC game probably as well.
Yes, I'm still on potato TV. I don't have HDR there, so I'm SOL there. I'm still 1080 scrub.
Ooh. It's not the resolution that matters. It's like the HDR is
The panel on this thing is like fairly old. So yeah,
I mean, it's back in Australia. I had to use a couple of apparently Echo TVs. I think the brand is.
Ooh.
It's like, I don't know, maybe it's like a big W house brand or something.
I've never seen it.
EKO, I think it's spelled.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I've seen
Netflix
that.
Netflix go to like HDR on that and it just looked like a washed out mess.
Ugh.
So assume you have an HDR display that can do it reasonable justice, and Death Stranding 2 just looks just next level and will probably hold that title until Grand Theft Auto 6 comes out, but whatever. That game had a $1 billion budget or whatever.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. Sektori, Death Stranding 2, congratulations. I'm officially declaring you the games of the year. For the Player 2 Pixelcast.
And if you had a problem with it, you should have joined us. If you
had a problem with it, then you should have come on the show. That probably, for most people listening, that doesn't mean anything. For people like you, so we're like pulled out at the last minute. To be fair, also agreed to join it. He's camping. It's not really his fault, but I'm going to blame him anyway. Then you're just going to have to live with it. I actually cannot remember what his was. No, that's right. His game of the year would have been one of the ones that everybody forgot about. It was one of the, there was a Dead Island game. I've already forgotten the subtitle of.
Yeah.
Speaking of shit that people just completely forgot. In terms of things that people will hopefully remember though, Rob, do you have anything coming up in the foreseeable future or either on the site or on your YouTube channel?
Site wise, there'll just be the stuff I'm looking forward to this year, which, you know, we're all contributing pieces
for. Presumably everybody's done.
Presumably. Yeah. And I'm doing a look at, Tiger Hully, which was converted for the Atari 7800 last year for its 40th anniversary. Cracking Coal Plant arcade game.
Another thing that I am not super familiar with.
Oh, the arcade version is on Steam, and on the consoles. Classic, vertical scrolling shooter. Brand new conversion got written for the 7800 that Atari commissioned. So,
is it Tiger Hally? Like, what's it?
Yeah, Tiger Dash Hally. It'll be like, I think it's, yeah, the standalone package on Steam. It's like,
it's not coming out for me at the moment, but I've said it twice. So, hopefully, if people are interested at all,
yeah,
then they can figure it for themselves. That beep beep is my phone because I did not set it to silent. Thanks for myself. Yep. Thanks, phone. Well, it's kind of my fault, I guess, because, you know, it's one button pressed to turn it to silent. I just didn't have it that way.
Yeah. That video will be upcoming. I'm still working on it, and it won't be out by the time this podcast goes out. So expect that in the next few weeks.
Nearish future. Yeah, I cannot speak about the next few weeks, but, I mean, I have submitted my text for, you know, anticipation for 2026. Submitted it like super early because I didn't know when I'd get a chance to like rub it up again. I forgot what the deadline was. And then like changed my mind twice as well. So Paul, I'm sure, is like loving me for that.
I've got a chunk of mine written up. Just got to try and finish them up. But yeah, just some other things took priority.
In my case, partly because I made an insane rule for myself where the games had to actually have 2026 at the very least announced as a release date.
Yeah.
Part is restriction, but also it let me like include a bunch of extra stuff. So technically, I think I write about 14 games because like I found a way to exclusively write, and this is why these four games are not included.
Yeah, I had a big challenge this time around.
Being excited for anything. Yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff I got excited about this year I did not know about.
Yeah.
This time last year.
That's it as well. Like, there's just stuff
that's
like...
getting my ears confused, whatever. It's January.
Yeah. There's stuff that just, yeah, sometimes just comes out of the blue that you're not necessarily looking for. It's like, oh, this actually rocks hard.
Yeah, I bet Keeper would have been in the running for my game of the years if, like, Double Fine weren't owned by Microsoft at the moment. That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.